Hello, everybody, and welcome to Patriotic Weekly Review, episode number 309. And for all those who have been following me on social media or have seen the comments in the chat, unfortunately, I'm having to do the whole show myself tonight, which is something I didn't want to do. I've been put in touch with Paul from Canada, by a guy I speak to regularly in the US. This guy really wanted Paul to come on the show. I had several guests lined up, and I've been speaking to people for the past week or so, sort of trying to book out shows for the next month. And Paul was willing initially to do the whole 2 hours, which is good, which is sort of what I wanted a guest to do, 2 hours. I had another guest booked, but would only do 1 hour. So I was like, well, I'd rather have a proper 2 hour show tonight. But unfortunately, I got a call just before the show went live from this guy in America who is friends with Paul. And they were like, well, unfortunately, Paul isn't in the best of health. He can't make it tonight. Well, it'd be about sort of just after midday for him where he is in Canada. And that kind of is a little bit annoying because I only found out sort of maybe at about 20 to 7. So unfortunately, that left me with basically no time to get any form of replacement. So I've got to do a solo show. And I don't particularly like doing solo shows because there's not really that rapport. There's no sort of questions between me and a guest, but it's where I am. So unfortunately, the show, if you want to support it, is going to be one of those question and answer shows. I'll talk about a couple of topics, things that have been on my mind, things that affect the UK. But I would really appreciate if people asked questions tonight, whether you super chat them or whether you just ask them in the chat, whatever. I mean, it's obviously going to affect the show, and it's really unfortunate because when something like, you know, Stripe leaving Odyssey happens, you want to keep doing sort of big shows, you want to keep getting guests on, you want to keep momentum going, because obviously it's been a big hit to content creators. So this is the worst possible time to have a guest pull out, especially after we had such an amazing show last week with Mike. But here I am doing this anyway. I've got a few things planned, and I'll talk about them first. So on Good Friday, I'll be with David Duke. I've missed that the last couple of weeks because I've had a few schedule problems. My daughter has been doing swimming lessons on Friday afternoon, and sometimes I've had to drive her there. So basically, that means I've had to move the David Duke show to Thursday, or if he's had a guest on Thursday, I've just had to skip it and rearrange. It's been unfortunate, but that should go back to normal. And obviously, it's Good Friday. There are no swimming lessons. So I'll be there if you want to tune in to that. Now, I've been working pretty hard on a script today, and that script is about the Online Safety Act. And I'm going to talk a little bit about that tonight. Now, you'll know that both BitChute and Gab have withdrawn their services to the UK, which is, to say the least, quite irritating. You know, quite irritating. It's something that you simply don't want, you know, to end up in a situation where two of the dissident platforms that people like myself rely on are now cut off to UK users is absolutely terrible. But I'm going to talk about this on a pre-scripted video about the mechanisms in which the Online Safety Act and Ofcom have forced Gab and BitChute to cut off UK users. And I'm also going to talk a little bit about the person in charge of Ofcom and this horrible woman called Georgia Harrison, who's sort of a reality TV airhead, who they've used to front the campaign. So as I was looking up stories on the Online Safety Act and reading up on how it's affecting different sites, I kept seeing this one woman, and she's named Georgia Harrison. She was on Celebrity Love Island, The Only Way Is Essex, and she's famous because her ex-boyfriend, who was basically the village idiot, this complete thicko, you know, had CCTV in his garden. They had sex in the garden, and he leaked the sex tape to his OnlyFans. And apparently, because this woman got into this problem, she's now got to go around crusading that we all have to have our internet freedoms taken away to make the internet a safer place for her. Well, maybe, love, you should be more discerning about who you open your legs to, you know. But yeah, that's not how it works, is it? You know, in the UK today, it's never the fault of any individual. It's never bad choices. You can never say that somebody did something wrong, it's got to be the fault of an inanimate object or a piece of technology. So, you know, when it comes down to it, it's never the guy wielding the knife, it's the knife. And in this case, it's not the guy who, it's not her fault for choosing an unsuitable boyfriend, definitely not. And it's not his fault for uploading it to the internet, it's the fault of the internet. So we all need to be censored because of a series of bad decisions that didn't involve any of us. Well, that's how it works. Anyway, I'll be talking about that on Friday, and I won't be doing a stream on Sunday. Now, Sunday's stream was probably going to be something a little bit more lighthearted. It was probably going to be something, well, originally it was going to be an interview with somebody from BitChute, but they couldn't do that. So I'm sort of juggling things around because I actually want to interview the owner of BitChute and talk about how it's going to affect him. And the real implications for this, because he's seen all the paperwork, he's been in touch with Ofcom, so that was going to be an interesting interview. But it's Easter Sunday, so I don't really want to be doing a stream that night, and most people will be with their family. So I'm really not expecting, to do much that weekend other than hunt for Easter eggs with my daughter and probably relax a little bit. So there'll be no stream on Sunday night. But other than that, all my regular streams will be in place. And next week, I've got Morgoth on, and we're going to be talking about the Online Safety Act in more detail. So, yeah, that gets that out of the way. Now, please do, if you can, consider going over to Entropy tonight and please making a financial contribution, making a small donation. That'd be really appreciated. I now rely on Entropy for my a monthly income. Odyssey obviously lost its Stripe integration, so you know I'm in the same boat as a lot of content creators now. So if you can go over to Entropy, and if you would like to make a small donation, and if specifically you'd like to ask a question, I will answer that, and we can do a bit of a ask me anything Q&A, or I can just talk about random stuff, or if everything goes horribly wrong, I'll just talk to the chat. But I'm sure I can find something to fill the air with. Anyway, if you want to make a donation, $3, $5, $10, whatever you can afford, if you can afford to be generous, I'd really appreciate that, especially as I've been let down tonight. And, you know, I do need a few questions for me for the second hour of the show, at least. You can also donate via cryptocurrency. All the crypto links are in the description below. And you can contact me at mark@thefallofwesternman.com. Anyway, I wanted to first start talking a little bit about Isabel Peralta. Now, she was on the thumbnail, or she is on the thumbnail. You can see her there if you pause the video or if you've seen the advert for this stream on social media. Now, she's been jailed in Spain for a year. Now, she made a fiery speech outside the Moroccan embassy, and that fiery speech has landed her into hot water, in quite a lot of hot water. She was actually facing a maximum, I think, of 3.5 years in jail. However, the 3.5 years in jail has not come to pass, thankfully. She has simply been sentenced to a year, and they're hoping that that will be suspended. But if it's not, I think it's a pretty harsh sentence. She's only 22 years old. She's obviously a nationalist. And what she's been sentenced for, in the words of the court, and I want to get this right, I was just sort of fiddling around there in Telegram to make sure I've got the exact quote for you. Insulting the dignity of Moroccan immigrants. And this all stems from a protest she took part in 4 years ago in 2021 in front of the Moroccan embassy in Madrid. And she said that illegal aliens flooding into Spain from Morocco constituted an invasion, and she called on Spaniards to repel non-white invaders. Now, I think that's a lot of time in prison, a year, for saying something like that. I don't think that's particularly out there speech. I don't think she was really going hard. I can't see any direct threats there. I'll read from a Twitter account which calls it insanity in Spain. Spanish activist Isabel Peralta sentenced to 1 year in prison for statements like this is not migration, it's an invasion, and Spain is Christian, not Muslim. And all of those things are true, but I think we can see a trend here. More and more people all over Europe are being sentenced to extremely harsh custodial sentences for saying things that normal people say in their own homes or normal people feel. Like, I don't think saying immigration is an invasion is something that is particularly controversial. That was something the BNP used to say. That's something I've heard mainstream pundits say. It's things like something I've seen said on election leaflets at times. But she's going to jail for that, unless her case is suspended. Now, one thing that's really bothered me about this case is, despite the fact that what she said was very mild, and despite the fact she's clearly, you know, an attractive young lady, I've actually met her in person. She doesn't speak English, but she seemed chirpy and friendly enough. Not that there was really any particular dialogue, because as I said, she doesn't speak English. But she's obviously very brave. She's very committed to this cause. She's very attractive. And, you know, she's thrown her whole life into this. And I've got to commend her for that. But I feel that there's a lot of people within the nationalist movement who haven't mentioned this case, who are ignoring this case or turning a blind eye to this case. And I think they're willfully doing so because she describes herself as a national socialist. Now, obviously, she has, you know, gone there. She's openly saying what she believes she is. She identifies as a national socialist. She talks about a certain historical leader, and I think a lot of people have turned their backs on her because of that, and I think that's a bad thing to do. I think that's a dangerous thing to do for the movement, because what we shouldn't do is turn our backs on people because of their belief system. Now, if we turn our backs on somebody because of the things they've said and done, that's different. So, for example, if she'd been caught in the back of a van loading ammunition into magazines and preparing hand grenades, and people would then have rightfully said, well, look, she's taking this too far, she's preparing an act of terrorism, etc., 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 then I feel that would have been a good reason to break with her and say, look, she's gone too far, this is not what we endorse. But she's going to jail for a speech crime, and as we know, or as we would probably guess, I mean, we can't say we know for sure, but we would guess that if a young Muslim woman had been on the streets saying similar things, but from a different perspective, I don't think she would have been arrested. I don't think she'd be going through the court system. I certainly don't think she'd be going to jail. And we've seen that here in the UK. We have seen Muslim girls kicking white girls on the floor, screaming abuse at them, calling them dirty white bitches. And judges have said, well, these young girls, you know, they were thrown off kilter because they weren't au fait with the Western way of life. So they got, you know, lost in a moment and did something crazy, and they get given a free pass. But there's not going to be a free pass for this girl. I mean, she may get a suspended sentence, but I don't think she will. I hope she does, but I don't think she will. But despite all that, despite the fact this is a genuine case of, you know, speech or thought crimes, people are turning their backs on her. And I don't like that one bit. And it reminds me a little bit of what happened with Sam Mealy, a good friend of mine, Laura's husband. Now, Sam had a poster of a certain historical leader in his garage, and the whole case against him in court, and I was there in court, sort of ended up revolving round minutia that had actually very little to do with the things Sam said. So, you know, the court admitted, well, everything Sam said was legal. All the stickers were legal. There was nothing wrong with the stickers. You know, there was nothing said on the stickers that were illegal. But we believe that the intent of producing the stickers was to stir up racial hatred. Therefore, Sam must be punished and jailed. Now, this then led down this dark route of, what was Sam really thinking? What does Sam really feel about ethnic minorities? Why might Sam have produced what are otherwise legal stickers? Why would he do that? And then it all comes down to, you know, three or four examples of racial slurs over 5 years worth of text messages, and, you know, a poster of the mustached guy from Germany that was in his garage by his home gym. Now, I understand why that was focused on, because they didn't really have a case. So they had to focus on things that would blacken Sam's character. And I feel the same's happened to Isabel Peralta. You know, there are videos of her, images of her, you know, performing Roman salutes. I know that she has worn armbands with certain Indo-European symbols on them. You know, she is very provocative. But that isn't really the issue here. The issue here isn't that she wore an armband. It isn't that she has an affinity for a certain 1930s German leader. The issue here isn't that she identifies as a National Socialist. The issue here are the words she said. And from what I've seen and from what's been reported, it appears that what she has said is really very, very normal discourse. The kind of thing that regular people on the streets of countries like the UK say every day in normal conversation. So I feel really sorry for, and I've highlighted the case, but I am disappointed that many people within the UK aren't highlighting the case because of how she identifies. And I think that's the wrong way to deal with a case like this. I think it's a wrong way to deal with this case, and I think it's pretty unfair. And I don't think people should be turning their backs on her. And if I do see a fundraiser set up to raise her money, to support her, to support her family, it's something that I would absolutely share and promote, because she deserves it. And, you know, I'm not saying I agree with her on everything, but the fact is, issues like this, which are issues of thought crime or speech crime, we shouldn't just toss them to one side or ignore them or decide that we're not going to talk about them because we don't feel it's politically expedient. You see, there's a real problem with that thought process, with that mindset. And it's the problem of, well, if I ignore the alligator in the room while it's eating other people, hopefully it will fill its belly and won't eat me. But it never works like that, because the alligator that we're up against has an insatiable appetite and wants to eat us all. And a good example of this is in France. Now, I'm not a huge fan of Marine Le Pen. I met her father on two occasions. He came to the UK to speak at a BNP event. I met him there. I had my picture taken with him. And then I was a guest of his, along with a small contingent of BNP sort of members. We were sort of dignitaries at the time, and we traveled over to France. We were guests of his at his version of the BNP's Red, White and Blue. Well, actually, the BNP took it from there. The Blue Blanc Rouge, which is a huge festival. It was held actually in an airport hangar, sort of a giant aeroplane hangar in Paris, because that was the there were so many people there. They couldn't just hold it in the conference hall. They had it in this, you know, hangar. It was absolutely brilliant. And we went round there, and it was a real eye-opener how successful they were. And I met Jean-Marie Le Pen there again for a second time. I shook his hand. He was very, very pleasant. He was very welcoming. He was a real statesman. He was a great man. Not so fond of his daughter, however. And in France, the French government have clamped down very, very hard on any actual genuine ethno-nationalists, to the point where French courts have said that there is no such thing as indigenous French people. There's no such thing as the French ethnicity. They deny all this. And as such, the Front National has a policy which doesn't really chime with what I believe or what I do. Their policy is, if you come to France, if you embrace the flag, if you salute the flag, if you have France in your heart and you learn to love France and you want to be French, you basically are French. Now, I find that quite difficult. I can see the argument in terms of Britishness there, because Britain is an amalgamation of nations. It's you know, Great Britain, excluding Northern Ireland, Great Britain is obviously England, Wales and Scotland, and those are three historic nations, and the English, the Welsh and the Scots are all individual ethnic groups with their own language, their own culture, their own ways of life, and they are distinct. But Great Britain in that sense is it is multicultural in terms of the fact that it's made up of, you know, primarily on the mainland, three different cultures. And then there are subcultures amongst there. So you have like the Cornish, there'll be Cornish people out there saying, oh, Mark, you know, we have our own language. We are a distinct nation in our own right. But Britain, you know, is a, it's more of an idea, and it's more of a sort of a multicultural union of nations. It is not an individual nation in its own right. And as such, it has a passport, it has citizenship. So you might be able to make the case, and you can make the case, that a black person who comes here and gains citizenship is a British citizen. He can never be indigenous to the British Isles, but a black person can never be English, Scottish, or Welsh, because they are distinct ethnic groups, and we should never give that up. And whilst, you know, in some cases we have to concede that there is a certain level of, say, Britishness that can be achieved by migrants, a migrant can never become English. A migrant might love England, a migrant might have England in his or her heart, a migrant might salute the English flag and go to every football match and, you know, deck his house out in St. George's crosses, you know, every St. George's Day. But that won't make him English. In the same way that I could go to Japan, I could gain Japanese citizenship, but I could never be ethnically Japanese. I could never be Japanese in the sense that, you know, Japanese people would look at me and say, look, he's one of us. I would always be an outsider. Now, I don't think that's controversial. I think that's pretty much common sense. And one of the reasons I don't really like the Front National is they sort of deny and put to one side that issue of ethnicity. But even though they do that, the state still goes after them. The state still goes after them. And the European regulators have obviously moved against Marine Le Pen and taken her to court. She's been found guilty, sentenced to 2 years in jail. One of those will likely be spent on house arrest, and the other year was suspended. So she'll be wearing one of these ankle bracelets, and she's obviously barred from standing in elections for 5 years. But why am I talking about this in relation to Isabel Peralta? Well, it's actually in relation to what I said about the alligator. You see, the alligator in France has eaten every genuine ethno-nationalist that there was. It's eaten everybody that spoke about Zionist, Israeli or Jewish power. It's eaten everyone that would stand up and say, hey, look, you can get a French passport, but there is a big difference between a French passport holder and somebody who is ethnically French. We are a people with a culture, a history, and a language. And you can't just become one of us. You may hold a passport, but you can't become one of us. But all those people are gone now. And all that's left, really, is Marine Le Pen. And she thought that if she moderated, that if she was super good and did everything that the system said, the alligator wouldn't eat her. The alligator would be like, look, you've appeased us, and, you know, I've got a full belly because I've eaten all those awful ethno-nationalists that the government hates so much. But no, the alligator was not satisfied eating them, and now it's eating her. And it's destroying her party and ruining their chance of winning the next presidential election, which, as it stands, she won't be standing in that presidential election. And maybe this will be the last presidential election where it's demographically likely that the RN, the National Rally, could actually win it. Because let's face it, France, I think, is further down that demographic road than we are in Britain. I mean, things are grim here in Britain, but I think France and Germany are actually in a worse position than we are. And I remember the last time I went to Paris, Paris was worse than London, believe it or not. So this idea that if we turn our backs on the likes of Isabel Peralta, the system will smile upon us and leave us alone is rubbish. If the system is leaving a nationalist group alone, it's because that nationalist group has cut some kind of backroom deal, or is being run by wrong-uns, or is fitting into a particular game that the establishment is currently playing. and the establishment will then in due course gobble them up when the game is done. You can't trust the establishment. You shouldn't try to appease the alligator, and you shouldn't turn your back on people who are principled nationalists facing jail sentences because, you know, they put their right arm in the air. That's not how we're going to survive. That's how the movement as a whole is fractured. It's why the movement is so partisan. And really what I'm saying is, you know, we should support this principled young female, whether we think everything that she says and everything she stands for is our cup of tea. And it might not be your cup of tea. It might not be your cup of tea. You might be looking at this and saying to yourself, well, come on, Mark. You know, she's out there on the street with a wacky armband throwing up Roman salutes, you know, and you don't want to support that. And if you don't want to support that, I'm not putting your arm up your back and making you. What I am saying is you should support her right to say the things she said. You don't have to come out and support everything she does, but just don't turn your back on her. Now, obviously, if there's any questions about that at the end, and remember, I'm flying solo all night. If you've just turned up and you're wondering why I'm here on my own, my guest has let me down. He's had health issues, very unfortunate. So if you want to send a super chat, if you want to help me, I'll be doing those in sort of 34 minutes. And it would be very, very good if people could support me in some way like that. Obviously, it's a difficult time at the moment with Odyssey losing its payment processor and there being no way to support content creators on the platform anymore. So if you would consider using Entropy, that would be very helpful. Now, the next thing I was going to talk about is actually, I'm not going to do anything about free speech in Canada because Paul's not here, and you know there's no point in me trying to talk about free speech or white minority issues in Canada because I really don't know enough about it to do a full segment. But there is something I do want to talk about, and it's something relating to UK politics. Obviously, it's the May elections on May the 1st, first Thursday in May is when people go to the polls, and that happens to be the first this year, so it makes it an extra short electoral cycle. And obviously, all eyes are on Reform. I think Reform are standing in nearly every seat that they could stand in every seat that's available. I think that's over 1,000. So it's an impressive number of candidates. And not only is it impressive, and look, a lot of people don't like Nigel Farage, but I've got to give him his dues, to arrange for 1,000 candidates to stand is damn impressive. Now, the BNP never got to those numbers. And I was involved when the BNP did its biggest election pushes. And as head of publicity, designing leaflets for some 300 plus candidates was always very stressful. It was a lot of work. I was really tanking the Red Bull back then as well, because you needed to be pepped up to get those leaflets done and out on time. And when you've been staring at a screen, reading names and, you know, ward names and putting in people's you know, bullet points and their little candidate bios, after a while you do get a little bit worn out, your eyes go square and you wonder, your head starts to spin, and you really need to pep yourself up. So I can't imagine what it's like to arrange for over 1,000 candidates to all have the paperwork filled out correctly and for them all to get leaflets. That is really a Herculean task. And I'll tell you this, it's testament to what Reform have done. They've now got over 250,000 members, but they are operating on a different level. They're operating on a level that seems to be an equal footing with the main parties. However, there is a rub to this, obviously, and that's that Nigel Farage is now going back on everything he said about deportations. He is watering down his message. He has a guy called Zia Yusuf, I think that's his name, who is I believe he's a Pakistani Muslim. Tell me in the chat if I'm wrong. And that's his new sort of partner in crime, so to speak, his business partner, the guy who helps him run everything. And I can't support that. I can support Reform winning seats. I can support Reform changing the way people think and vote, but as an actual political organization, to have sort of a Pakistani Muslim as the chairman, no. And I think that's coloring Nigel Farage's thought process. I think that's why Nigel Farage is absolutely unwilling to talk about the grooming scandal anymore. That's why all talk of reform backing some kind of independent inquiry into grooming has gone out the window. It's gone out the window because his new best mate would feel very uncomfortable going down that road, no doubt. And I can understand why he'd feel uncomfortable, but the fact is, I'm not here to make people feel comfortable. I'm here to speak the truth, and I'm here to talk about big issues. And the fact of the matter is, Pakistani Muslims are vastly overrepresented when it comes to the grooming and sexual abuse of young white girls. And we shouldn't stop talking about that because Nigel Farage has appointed a Pakistani Muslim to be the chairman of the party that he runs. It's an absolute scandal. So why am I talking about Farage though? Well, actually, I'm talking about Farage so I can segue into something else, because there is big news, and that is a new political party has been formed called the Integrity Party, and it's being run by Ben Habib. Now, I think Ben Habib, let me get this right, because I don't want to get this wrong. So Ben Habib was the former chairman of Reform, and again, he's listed as a Pakistani British politician, but he appears to be working very, very closely with Rupert Lowe. And it appears at the time when I'm speaking today, the 16th of April, that this new party could well attract the likes of Rupert Lowe. It could well attract a sizable number of Reform members and candidates, and it appears that the Reform Party could be headed into a situation where there is somewhat of a split. Now, Farage has said that Rupert Lowe is not coming back to the party. Farage has already come out and said, you know, he's not going to entertain him as part of Reform anymore, that there's too much water under the bridge. Zia Yusuf has reported Rupert Lowe to the police for threats to kill. Rupert Lowe's had all his firearms seized by the police as part of that investigation. Now, when I say firearms, I don't think he's some sort of gun-toting loon, and I do believe in the right to bear arms, but I believe that the firearms in question are historic pieces. So in the UK, you need a license if you are to bear arms, i.e. a shotgun or a rifle, but normal people can buy certain weapons, but they have to be what are known as black powder rifles, and they're antiques, so the kind of old muskets you might see in a film like Zulu, or a piece from, say, the Napoleonic Wars. You know, you might have had a rifle from the Battle of Waterloo that's been passed down in your family. You are legally allowed to own those. And I believe that Rupert, I keep saying I believe because I don't want to I don't want to get myself any legal hot water, but I believe he owned a number of these sort of black powder antique weapons, and they've all been seized. So the animosity between Nigel Farage and Rupert Lowe is now sort of probably so great, I don't think there's going to be any backpedaling. I don't think you're going to get those two guys in a room. I don't think they're going to thrash it out. And I think, you know, at best, Rupert Lowe will remain as, from Farage's point of view, at best, Rupert Lowe will remain as an independent MP. At worst, at very worst, he will get in bed with Ben Habib, and they will run as a, on the surface, a more sort of ethno-aware, anti-immigration, pro-deportation organisation, because Rupert Lowe appears to be getting more and more radical. And some of the things that Rupert Lowe is saying are undoubtedly more hardline than the things Nick Griffin said back when he was elected as an MEP. And I've said this before on the show, but when Nick Griffin was elected as an MEP, he did water things down. He put things like deportations and repatriation on a back burner. And the big slogan of that campaign was British jobs for British workers. And I remember the leaflet because I designed it. I was the one who designed the leaflet that got him elected. One side, it said people like you voting BNP. And it was a picture of a lovely family saying, look, you know, normal people like you are behind this organisation. And it did say, to its credit, stop mass immigration. But the big draw at the time was British jobs for British workers. And what Rupert Lowe's saying from this parliamentary position is much more impressive. And also what Rupert Lowe's saying about the grooming gangs is much more impressive. Because last time I saw his fundraiser, he had managed to raise over £500,000 to fund an independent inquiry into the grooming scandal. So that's another thing. You know, Farage is backpedaling on this, and Rupert Lowe is putting his foot to the floor, pedal to the metal, and he is taking his supporters down this road of looking for the truth about grooming, which for me is something that I find very, very important. It's close to my heart. It's something I campaigned upon for years. And, you know, I'd be very, very, very happy for him to achieve something there. But starting a new party is an interesting prospect. Now, there are so many micro parties in the UK, so many historic nationalist parties. There is still Reform. There is still UKIP going. And now the Integrity Party, along with loads of other little groups that have splintered off over the years, such as David Curtin's Heritage Party. I quite like David Curtin, actually. He's quite an amusing guy. He says a lot of good stuff. He's somebody I'd like to interview. So, David, if anyone wants to pester David Curtin, I'd love to talk to him. But I don't think the answer to this is another party. And I certainly don't like the fact that every one of these so-called anti-immigration, pro-deportation parties are always headed up by somebody who's fundamentally a migrant or of migrant background. It just doesn't sit right with me. I don't know why. Well, I do know why. It's called reputational shield. Nigel Farage and others believe that if they have a guy up on stage with them who isn't indigenous to these islands, that the accusation of being racist will not stick. Now, I think the accusation of racism is one that increasingly is useless, because most people today are sort of sick of that word. You know, now I'm not saying that means everybody's going to go out and vote for an ethno-nationalist party. They obviously won't. But I think the accusation of, oh, look, he's a racist, is not as powerful or important as it used to be. But nevertheless, here we have another party on the horizon. Now, what do I think will happen here? Well, I actually gave a talk about Nigel Farage and Rupert Lowe a while back, and I did say this was one of the options. One of the options was that he was to start his own party, or, you know, go into partnership with someone like Ben Habib, which looks likely. But my worry here, and I don't know what you guys think in the chat, give me a little feedback, because I'm looking at the chat now. I'm moving my window to one side, so I'm looking at the chat, and I want to hear what you've got to say. Because I look at this and I think to myself, who is this really going to benefit? Now, I know Reform are not a party of ethno-nationalists. And I know that Reform are not going to be the ones that deliver us from white minority status. I'm not delusional. You know, I've not been huffing paint all day. I haven't lost my mind. However, I think that if there is this identity party, which might be full of really good people who say all the right things, my worry is, being somebody who knows about how the electoral system works, I think we're going to end up with a situation where you see Reform and the Identity Party on the same ballot paper, and the only people who benefit from that are the Tories and Labour. So people asking in the chat, if you're asking where Paul Fromm is, he's cancelled. He's not very well. So I was hoping for some feedback on what I was saying, not on the Paul Fromm situation. But yeah, he is not here. So, yeah. So I look at this as really a bad thing, because every time you see one of these splits, every time you see one of these parties sort of fracturing and falling apart, a party that the public have started to put their faith in, you end up in a really, really bad situation. We saw this with the BNP. When the BNP collapsed, people just went back to voting Tory and Labour. Why? Well, it takes people a lot to break away from the mainstream. So people are really wedded to those two parties. And it's a big decision to say, I'm not voting for them anymore. I'm going to go out on a limb. I'm going to vote for a more radical party. And historically, people would say, and I'm risking being called racist. Now, I remember one day, this is just a little anecdote, but I was out leafleting in a place called Richmond Hill. And I was walking through the streets and you're pushing the leaflets through the letterbox. But sometimes people are in gardens because you're doing it before an election. You're regularly leafleting sort of March and April. That's when things really intensify. That's when the party should be out there on the streets. And you often bump into people in their gardens as the nights are getting lighter. And I gave the leaflet to a guy in the garden, and he looked at it and he looked at me and he opened the leaflet. Oh, nice one, mate. I'm voting for you. He says, you've got my vote. And his wife came flying out of the house, took the leaflet off him, like ceremoniously put it in the wheelie bin, banged the lid down, and she was like, he's not voting for you, get in here now. And he was like, oh, he was like, you know, sort of a whipped dog going back into the house. Like, oh god, it's like, I hope he still does vote for me. Obviously I don't know whether he did or not, but it does take people a lot to come out and say they're going to vote for a dissident party or a group that's seen as outside of the mainstream. And to normal people, Reform is outside of the mainstream. But when a party like Reform or the BNP before it collapses, people are demoralised. The public are demoralised. And this happened in places like Burnley. It happened in places like Stoke. It happened in places like Barking and Dagenham. The BNP did very well. And I believe that in Stoke, Barking and Dagenham and Burnley, at one time or another, the British National Party was the official opposition on the council. And this was really good. I'm not sure about Stoke, actually. It might have been that the BNP held the balance of power there, because that's an important thing. You know, if you've got 30 Labour councillors and 30 Conservative Party councillors, then the BNP have got 10. Well, whichever side the BNP vote with wins the debate. And at that point, both parties have to kiss up to the nationalists to get their policies through. And that can, you know, that can basically put you in the position of being the kingmaker. So that can be important too. But in Burnley and Barking and Dagenham, the BNP were definitely official opposition at one time. Now, when the BNP went down in those areas, that was it. People were absolutely crestfallen. And it wasn't just that the BNP lost their seats. People lost all faith in outsider politics and just returned to the mainstream. They just put their heads down and said, look, we enjoyed it while it lasted. It wasn't credible. We're going back to voting Labour or Tory. And that's my big problem with this new party and with these splits and with these troubles around Farage and Rupert Lowe, is not that I think Lowe's a bad guy. I think Lowe's a great guy. And look, if you said to me tomorrow, Rupert could go back, you know, I've got a big red button on my desk, and if I hit it, Rupert goes back into Reform, he takes it over, he becomes the leader, and he's the guy setting the policy and the tone of the party. Well, I can tell you this, I would be over the moon. I would be dead happy. The whole party then would be orientated around deportations, around dealing with illegal immigrants, around protecting our southern border, and about speaking out against the grooming gangs. It'd be fantastic. And I would genuinely back that. I would give Rupert Lowe a chance, and I would say, look, you know, we've been burnt before, but let's give the guy a chance. However, and this is the problem, if he starts his own small party, or if he goes into partnership with Ben Habib, who again is a Pakistani-British businessman, you know, he is not indigenous. He might be a nice guy. I'm sure I'd have lots in common with him. I certainly wouldn't be rude to him. And I'd certainly sit down and break bread with him if I had the chance. But I don't think he's the right guy to be the chairman of a party like that. So this is the situation. If this new party does really get off the ground and start going on the ballot paper, all it will do is pull votes away from Reform, and I think it will have the effect of helping the mainstream. And that is not what we need right now, because at the moment, the mainstream is in collapse. It's in free-for-all. It's running scared. You can see that by all the things it's doing. The Online Safety Act, mass arrests, 30 people a day being arrested for saying things on social media. I mean, it's crazy what the British people are going through at the moment, and how far the British government will go to try and ensure that we're living under this cloud of fear so that we don't step out of line. You know, the establishment is genuinely shaken at the moment. And people think that when the establishment starts to shake or becomes shaken, that is a situation that you won't go back from, that people don't go back to sleep. And I've heard this lots of times. So once people are woken up, mate, you don't put them back to sleep. Once people know the truth, they know the truth for life. Sort of yes and sort of no. You know, the BNP got almost 1 million votes in the European election in 2009. Well, where are all those people today? You know, the National Front had 16,500 members at its height. What happened to them? They just walked away and went back to their normal lives. The BNP had 14,500 members. What happened to them? They walked away and went back to their normal lives. You know, Reform Now has about 250,000 members. And trust me, they can get fired up. They can make a big difference, but then they can get disappointed and walk away and go back to their normal lives. And I'm afraid that is the kind of thing that happens in politics. So this whole Rupert Lowe thing is something that I understand, but I'm not as enthusiastic about it as other people. Now, I want to touch on this topic because a lot of people are going to be celebrating this, but I'm sort of not celebrating. I'm sort of rolling my eyes. I'm going to read the headline from the Daily Mail. And I posted this on my Telegram earlier today at about 3:30 in the afternoon. And here's the headline. I'll read it verbatim. "I'm so proud to know you. J.K. Rowling celebrates after Supreme Court rules legal definition of a woman is based on biological sex." So on one hand, this is good news, isn't it? You know, the Supreme Court says, look, you're born a woman, you're born a man. And if you're a fella that decides he's going to put on a wig, take some hormone replacement therapy and, you know, slap in a couple of fake boobs, that doesn't make you a woman. You might think you're a woman, you might call yourself a transgender woman, but you are not a woman. And you're not a woman under the legal definition of the term. A woman is based on biological sex. And that's a good thing. It's good that the court have ruled on this. I don't want to be Captain Black-pilled telling you all that everything's crap all the time. You know, this is a good ruling. But the fact that we need to have such a ruling, the fact that people are celebrating this as some great win, which they are, is really just a barometer of how terrible things are. When you think you're winning because a court accepts that a woman is born a woman, that a woman is a biological entity, that, you know, Fat Harry from down the road who's feeling a bit depressed and fancies being a bird, so he slaps his ex-wife's wig on, he's not a woman. The fact the court said he's not a woman, that's not really a win. It's not really a win that we need a court to tell us this. It's not really a win that we were on the precipice of accepting Fat Harry in his ex-wife's wig as a woman. That's not a win. And I kind of worry about these things because the left always take 10 steps forward with their ideology. And then at some point, they'll take the 11th step. It'll be a step too far. And people will be genuinely annoyed. And you'll see people start to speak out. You'll see people start to push back. You'll see people start to say, we've had enough. And at this point, the left take one or two steps back. But remember, they took 11 steps forward. And it was that 11th step that was the one too far. And at this point, people who are the Daily Mail readers, and I bet the comments section is banging. In fact, I'm just going to look it up and see what the comments section is, because I bet people are going absolutely crazy about it. In fact, they can't be going that crazy because it's already fallen off the top of the news feed. So I can't even find the damn article now. I mean, that's annoying, isn't it? I was going to talk about it and it just shot down the news feed. Well, you know, that tells you everything you need to know, doesn't it? But usually the comments on an article like that are comments, you know, that would make you think somebody had just won the lottery. The way people celebrate when they get a little bit of a win like this is ridiculous. You know, you would think the way people were celebrating, that there was, you know, mass deportations taking place, that the southern border had been closed, that the government had passed some form of law saying, you know, white Britons must make up at least 90% of the population at all times. But no, they've just said, you know, a woman is a woman. So, you know, the best rated comment says, we should take a minute to remember all the poor women who were fired, verbally attacked, even prosecuted for objecting to a biological male invading their once safe space. That's not a bad comment. Somebody here is on my wavelength. He said, amazing that it has to go to the Supreme Court to work it out. But the third comment down is the common sense has prevailed. You know, the fact is, this is that tiny little one step back that the left always have to take because they pushed it too far. And this shouldn't be a point where people are celebrating as if we've won. You know, this is like, you know, this is like being pushed back and losing a war for 100 days. And then one day, the enemy, you know, has to regroup, reassess, and makes a minor tactical retreat. You don't start celebrating like you've won the war. And if the Daily Mail and if other so-called conservatives actually were interested in winning the war, which they're not, which they're absolutely not, they would see this little bit of a retreat and be like, right, this is where we push forward. This is where we demand clarity on other things. This is where we push our agenda. You know, they've taken one step back. Let's make them take two or three, and then we could push them to four or five or six. But they won't. That will never happen. This will be one of those moments that, unfortunately, despite being a good ruling, and I'll explain why it's a good ruling in a moment, it's also a dangerous ruling. Because when things like this happen, people celebrate, they think they've got their big win, and they feel good about themselves. And they go back to normie world. Well, we've done it, guys. A woman's a woman. They've acknowledged that. Wonderful. Let's forget this nonsense and get back to the snooker. That's what people do. It's unfortunate. And I'm not saying I want to heap misery on people, but these tiny little wins, these things that shouldn't even have to be a win because it should never have got here, are actually things that send people back to sleep. Now, there is a silver lining to this, and that silver lining is that now if you say, look, a man is a man and a woman is a woman, because of that ruling, I think it'd be very hard to prosecute people. And sadly, in Britain, there have been many people who've been prosecuted, you know, people dragged out of their home for saying, that's a fella, you're not a real woman. And hopefully that will bring an end to that. So there are some good things that can come from this. And I genuinely and sincerely hope this helps people who might be under investigation at the moment. I hope this helps people who have been victims of the hideous anti-white police who have been knocking on their door because they've said a fellow in a dress is not a woman. I hope this does help people in some way. I hope some good comes from this. But I can also see this being something that sends normal people back to sleep, that puts normal people back in that, in their little box. And that just isn't what I want. I want people to stay awake to the problems. I want people to push forward. And we've seen this with Trump. I mean, I did a post the other day because I've got to say, Trump has been a roller coaster ride. But at the moment, we're at a real low with Donald Trump because he's given up on every single thing that we actually wanted. You know, he has ended the deportation of illegal migrants because now he's saying, well, if they're working in hotels, if they're working in hospitality, if they're working on farms, they can stay. I mean, what is he talking about? What the hell is he talking about? The reason we want them gone, or one of the reasons we want them gone, there's loads of reasons we want them gone. They shouldn't even be here. But one of the reasons is that they're working in hotels, they're working on farms, they're working in hospitality at lower wages for longer hours, don't care about working practices, so they push down our wages, they take our jobs, and they make working life far worse for us. That's one of the reasons we want them gone. That's the exact reason Trump is keeping them. And this is why you can't trust capitalists, because capitalists eventually will always go back to their god, which is money, which is the bottom line, which is profit. And that's what Trump's doing. Trump's saying to himself, hey, well, some of my mates here who've got big hotel chains, they're going to lose a lot of profit if they can't employ all those illegals. Some of my friends over here, they own farms. They own the means of production. Oh, my God. If they have to employ white Americans again, what will they lose out on? So already he's dropped the deportations. The deportations are going on the back burner. He's letting them stay if they take your jobs. I mean, God, it's nauseating. Ending mass immigration. Well, he's given up on that as well. He doesn't care about ending mass immigration. He's saying to people, and I can't quote him verbatim, but it's going to be pretty close to what he actually says. He's saying, America's going to be so great. It's going to be so great. There's going to be so many jobs, so much manufacturing everywhere. American manufacturing, it's going to be the best in the world. That's why we need so many migrants. We're going to have so many manufacturing plants, so many products, so many exports. We're going to need all of these migrants in our factories. We're going to need them producing things. We're going to need them packing goods. We're going to need them wheeling crate after crate after crate of products and putting them on aeroplanes, because we're going to be the world's biggest exporter again. We're going to make America great again. We're going to make American manufacturing great again with immigrants. No, that wasn't the deal, was it? The deal was that American manufacturing would come back and that the white Americans and the areas in places like the Rust Belt, which had fallen to pieces and fallen into disrepair, they would get better. Life would get better. Life would get better for the average white American. It wasn't that we're going to open a massive manufacturing plant and then fill it with Indians who are here with H-1B visas and screw those in the Rust Belt and all those white Americans who have fallen into the cracks created by capitalists who only think of profit, so they offshored all the manufacturing. That wasn't the point, Donald. It wasn't the point. But we're not stopping mass immigration. You know, preventing cheap foreign labor from taking US jobs. He's all for that again. And obviously, he's all for his little trade war because he likes that. He's stubborn. It's something that amuses him. It's something that he gets something out of personally, you know, and his cronies have got something out of it. They crashed the stock market. They all spent bloody hundreds of thousands of dollars buying everything when it was at a low. And then he dropped some of the tariffs and the stock market rebounds and him and his cronies made huge, huge amounts of money in 48 hours. Now, look, I'm not saying that Kamala Harris would have been better. And I'm certainly not saying Biden would have been better than Trump. But what I am saying is this, and I want to be very, very clear. If a Democrat had done what Trump had done, if a Democrat had cooked the economy, crashed the stock market, bought a load of, you know, shares and stocks and, you know, assets on the cheap, and then sort of started to fix things, essentially using government policy making to enrich themselves whilst normal Americans got poorer, there'd be outrage. And there should be outrage. The fact is, Trump has run a giant scam, and people, you know, I don't dislike Marjorie Taylor Greene. I don't really know her, but what she seems to say when she's in interviews seems good. She seems quite strong. She seems somebody who makes the right points from time to time. But I'll tell you this, seeing Marjorie Taylor Greene gloating because, you know, she's made hundreds of thousands of dollars off the suffering of normal Americans because, you know, the tariffs making your electrical products go up in price, but it also caused the stock markets to crash. And then she bought when it was at a low. Oh, I just don't like that. But there is one thing that Trump has managed to do, or one thing that he will feel he's got right on and that he's not backing down on, is he's appointed an Israeli-born anti-Semitism czar. And I'm going to read this. Trump names Israeli-born Yehuda Kaplan as U.S. anti-Semitism czar. President Trump on Thursday announced he was nominating Israeli-born Chabad Lubavitch Rabbi Yehuda Kaplan as US special envoy to monitor and combat anti-Semitism. I mean, as David Duke would say, you can't make this up, can you? You just can't make it up. He's reneged on every single thing that the average white American voted for him over. But the one thing he has done, the one thing he won't bend upon, the one thing he's absolutely committed to, is bringing in an Israeli Jew to monitor free speech and freedom of expression in America. It is an absolute scandal. And again, if the Democrats have done something, if the Democrats have, say, brought in, you know, an Indian guy and said, look, we're bringing this Indian guy in to monitor racist speech, there'd have been outrage, and there should be. But there should also be outrage when Trump brings in some Israeli Jew to do the same for the state of Israel. And it all points back to one place. And look, this is why I'm so deplatformed, and this is why you should support me, because I'm the only guy in Britain saying this. I'm the only person who's consistently said this since 2016 and has faced debanking, has faced harassment, is in a position where I'm not allowed to do normal things that everyone else is allowed to, because I speak about this. But it's true. Where do all roads lead back? They all lead back to Israel. All roads lead back to Israel. They're the power brokers. They're the ones in charge. Now, Donald Trump has really got 330 million bosses. He should be answering to the American people. He should be answering to American citizens. He should be answering to his voters. He should be answering to his supporters, the people who backed him up, however you want to call it, whether you say he should answer to all voters or the ones who voted for him. I don't care. He should be answering to Americans, but he's not. He's answering to Israel. And the things that he will not back down on are giving money to Israel, starting a war with Iran, and actually bringing in radical, because Chabad Lubavitch is a radical Jewish organization. The things that they preach, the things that they believe in, are very, very disturbing when you look into it. I've been on shows with people who've discussed this. Adam Green discusses this. David Duke discusses this. You know, if white people were preaching the kind of things that they preach, we'd be in big trouble. We'd be in big trouble. It'd be like your doors would be going through, but for them, religious exemption. So he's got this guy who I believe is likely to be a Jewish supremacist, a Zionist, an Israeli supremacist, somebody who no doubt believes that Palestine should be wiped off the map. And he's been given a job to monitor, this is a foreign guy, being given a job to monitor American citizens. And if he doesn't like what American citizens say about a foreign nation, he's going to be given the power to curtail their rights. Is that putting America first? Is that making America great again? No, it's not. It's absolute, total betrayal of the American people to place a foreign power in charge of freedom of speech in your own country is treachery. It's treason. But to do it so nakedly and so blatantly, and to stand with this fella in front of, you know, Israeli flags all over the back wall, Israeli flags, you know, he's holding the guy, he's hugging him, he's giving him a kiss. I mean, it's sickening. It is literal treason. It is treachery. He's betrayed all his voters. And those voters, they didn't just vote for anti-immigration laws. They didn't just vote for deportations. They didn't just vote for a better standard of living. They voted for freedom, free speech, freedom of association. And what have they got? Sweet FA. They've got exactly the opposite of what they voted for. White Americans in, when was it, 2020, made up 61.6% of the American population. White Americans were already a minority in age group 35 and under. After the Biden years, when there was basically open borders. I shudder to think, what do you reckon it'll be now? 59%, 58%, maybe 57%. If it shifted by a percent a year, it could have dropped. And remember, census is best case scenario. We could be looking at white Americans already being close to just 55% of the population. And Trump was seen as this sort of last great white hope, something to turn this around. And what has he been? Nothing more than a proxy for the state of Israel. White Americans will become a minority. That isn't going to be turned around now. And the white Americans that are left will be little more than pay pigs, slaves, and foot soldiers for the state of Israel. That is what Zion Don has granted the American people who voted for him. And to my shame, I actually felt he was a better option than Kamala Harris, because I felt he would do some things that were decent. And to be fair to him, and I will be fair to him, at least he freed the January the 6th protesters. That was a good thing, you know. And he said a few decent things about white genocide in South Africa. But is he acting? No. His actions are little more than the actions of a puppet. And we know who's pulling the strings. Anyway, it's the second hour of the show. I hope people have been entertained by this first hour of me sort of going solo. If people like this, I probably could do this every night, couldn't I? Just do a solo show every night. News of the day, just like JF. Anyway, if you'd like to make a donation, you can do so, but only through Entropy. That's the only thing available. Please do consider making a donation. So far, people have been very generous, especially one guy. But if people would like to contribute, it would really help. Obviously, my income has been hit quite heavily because, you know, people could make offline super chats, you know, through Odyssey. All that's gone now. So anything that you can you feel you can part with to help me keep doing this, especially in my hour of need when I'm flying solo, it will be very much appreciated. Anyway, we're going to do the super chats. Open Borders for Israel gave $5. Thank you so much, my friend, and thank you very much for moving over to Entropy. He said, is Paul in contact with Dr. Ricardo Douche? I can't pronounce the last name, and it doesn't matter because he's not here. He says, maybe he can get him on PWR. Well, it's just me, mate, so I can't answer that question. But thanks for the $5. You're a good supporter, and I apologize for not being able to answer your question properly. But obviously, Paul is in ill health, and we hope he gets better. N-W-L-O-N Ports. I don't know how to pronounce that, so I'm just going to call it Night. I can't pronounce that, but you've been so generous tonight and I can't pronounce your name. Please tell me how to pronounce your name. I feel like a fool now. Anyway, we'll call it NW Lon Ports gave $50. Thank you so much. And he said, ahoy, Mark. BitChute and Gab won't do UK anymore, but do we know if the Telegram CEO is still in jail? Well, thank you for the $50. I don't know about the Telegram guy. I don't know if he's still in jail. And I'll say this. I think Telegram could be next, unless, you see, the problem is in the way that the law is worded, is generally you're innocent until proven guilty. So if you were to be charged and you were to be on trial under a certain law, the prosecution would have to prove beyond reasonable doubt. So DNA evidence is actually circumstantial evidence. DNA evidence, people say DNA evidence is 100%. It's not 100%. It's 99.9999%. Now, you know, there's never been a case of DNA evidence actually being wrong. There's never been a case of two people having exactly the same DNA unless they're identical twins. And I'm not really sure they do have exactly the same DNA. Anyway, DNA evidence isn't 100%, but it is what is classed as beyond a reasonable doubt. So when somebody goes on trial and they have to defend themselves, the prosecution has to prove that they broke the law, and they have to prove that beyond reasonable doubt, because there's always, you know, a tiny percentage of doubt, but it's beyond reasonable doubt. However, the way the Online Safety Act is written, the way it's put together, is not the way conventional law is dealt with. So it's not that Ofcom, the regulator, has to prove that you were guilty. You have to prove that you did fully comply. You have to prove that you are in compliance with the legislation. So you can't just say to them, look, screw you, you prove I'm breaking the law. We're not breaking the law, but prove that I am. They will just take you to court and say, no, they're not in compliance. They have to prove, websites and service providers have to prove that they are compliant. It does not fall on Ofcom to prove that they're not compliant. So at the moment, every website and every forum, every website, every forum, every video sharing site that provides, not just that provides services to UK users, but could, and that's the wording, I've been working on a script all day, you can tell because I'm getting the wording very correct here, that could provide services to the UK, are now in a position where they, or even if they don't, even if a website, so you could have a website in America that deals with something the UK doesn't like, we'll just say that, something the UK doesn't like, and there might not be a single UK user registered on that website, and the website might not even get a single hit from anyone in the UK. It might be a real American thing, but the UK government don't like it. The UK government can contact the owners of that website and say, look, you offer a service which could be used here by UK citizens, by UK web users. And because of that, we want you to tell us that you comply with our legislation. Now, at that point, that US website is actually compelled to comply with Ofcom. And it's compelled to comply with Ofcom because Ofcom, even if they can't find them, even if they can't bring them to court in the UK, Ofcom can then use their powers to reach out to any company that operates in the UK and force that company to stop providing services to that American website. That's why BitChute and Gab have pulled out, because the UK government could go to Visa, MasterCard, Cloudflare and say, this website could be used by UK users. They won't comply with this new legislation. And because they won't comply with the new legislation, what we're going to do is ensure that Cloudflare, Visa, MasterCard, all these companies that operate in the UK and have to operate in the UK, we're going to pressure them and compel them to withdraw their services from this website because the website isn't compliant with this law. It's very, very insidious. It can affect people in a number of ways. It truly is the most draconian legislation I have ever seen, or that I ever recollect seeing, should I say. Somebody might say, oh, well, what about this one? Well, I can't recollect seeing legislation that's more draconian than this. So I hope that helps. And please, please do watch my scripted video. It'll be out on Friday. I really, really appreciate people watching those. I put a lot of effort into them. I know they don't get the hundreds of thousands of views they used to when they're on YouTube, but they still do get a few thousand views across all platforms, somewhere between, well, sometimes they get sort of 10,000 plus views, which isn't bad, but I wish they got more. But please do support them because I put a lot of effort into them. So that'll be out on Friday. Anyway, next super chat. Ezra Scamberg gave $5. Thank you so much. He said, just bought a wallet from a Mohel, $60. But when you rub it, it becomes a handbag. Oy vey, oy vey. Thank you so much. Purple Sage gave $15. Thank you so much. And said, thanks for all you do, Mark. Well, thank you, my friend. Thank you for the generosity. Archie gave $7.44. Thank you so much. And he said, I imagine that streaming laws would only keep Brits who can't buy a VPN from accessing hate, i.e. mainly children, from accessing Gab and BitChute. Did Gab and BitChute find the technical needs and administration too costly? Well, I think I answered your question, but do use a VPN. You know, go and support a VPN. There are companies out there will let you access these sites, you know, because it is affecting you. You know, and I'm worrying, what are they going to do about Rumble? What are they going to do about Odyssey? What are they going to do about DLive? Because this isn't something which is just limited to one site. This is going to be something that affects every single site, that affects, you know, well, basically just affects everyone. And it is a serious, serious problem. And I can see eventually UK online services being filtered by ISPs. So even if you do use a VPN, I think it could be blocked at ISP level, which is horrendous. Aunt Sally gave $5 and said thank you with a smiley huggy face. Hello, Aunt Sally. Unfortunately, we're not doing so. This is a bit of a message for Aunt Sally, even though she just said a thank you, which I do greatly appreciate. Aunt Sally is part of the book club. The book club, we're going to go live on the last Sunday of the month. We were reviewing, we're going to review Ed Dutton's book, but something is happening around that date, which I can't talk about, which prevents us from doing the book review. But we are going to get round to reviewing Ed Dutton's book, hopefully next month. I know we've had a bit of a hiatus, and that was because my son arrived. Joy to behold. You know what I always say? There is no greater joy in life than holding your own child, than bringing a child into the world. I always say that, and I always say the most important thing you can do is have children. And I do mean that, and I do love being a dad. However, saying all that, at 6:20 on Tuesday morning, when I heard a very small little boy having a poop in his nappy, I thought it was safe to change it. And as I was changing the nappy, I was just about to put the new nappy on, just about to seal it, just wiping his bum. If you've ever wiped a baby's bum, you sort of push the legs back and make sure you wipe them all clean. And as I was doing this, he farted. And along with the fart came a stream of rather warm liquid poop. I'm not sure how much a baby can fit inside them either, because there was just tons of it. So he's only small, but there's just so much. Just so much. And at that point, I thought, having children is truly the most important thing you can do. But at the same time, at 6:20 in the morning, you don't want to be covered in liquid poo. I mean, you never want to be covered in liquid poo, but when you've just got out of bed, you certainly don't want to be. Bit of a disaster, but, that's the joys of being a father. So, bit of TMI there for you all. NW Lon Ports gave $5. Thank you so much. So David Duke just had his 75th birthday party at Patriot Front Network in Texas. Would be great if you can get David on to discuss the event with you in a future PWR interview. I'm sure David will come on again. I shared the post. I've got to say, for my money, and there's lots of good groups in America, and I'm not saying like other groups are bad because they're not Patriot Front, but I look at what Patriot Front are doing, and they are really, really doing good stuff. And seeing the David Duke 75th anniversary, sort of his birthday special with the big cake and everything like that, was really good. Wish David all the best. As I said, I'm going to get back to regular programming with him again soon, and hopefully I'll have Thomas Rousseau on again. I think Patriot Front are really good. They're doing God's work. And Thomas, I've got to say, there's a lot of organizations that get big, and the leaders of those organizations, it goes to their head. I've seen a lot of young streamers, especially, who sort of start running something, they get big, it goes to their head, they become less relatable. But Thomas Rousseau is such an entertaining guest, such a good speaker, but also such a humble guy. He's just so humble and nice. I had him on, and he really is somebody that I warm to. And sometimes when you have new guests on, you don't know whether it's going to go well. Now, I've had guests on in the past, and there's been a little bit of a clash, or they've said something I don't like, or something maybe they shouldn't have said because I'm in the UK. Or sometimes you just don't get on with people. Sometimes, you know, the jokes don't hit, or you can't have a laugh. But with Thomas, over the stream, I've really, really warmed to him. Everything he said was very relatable. And for an organization that does so much and helps so many people, and, you know, for a guy that rightfully gets so much good press and so much applause, he's a really humble guy. So I've got to thank him for everything he does, but also thank him from, helping David. NW Lon Ports gave another $15. He's been so generous tonight. He says, hopefully we can get Mr. Fromm on the air sometimes, because of his momentous event of Trudeau's resignation, its replacement by an exact political replica, a conservative flip of Canadian legislature, looks highly likely. Well, look, thank you so much for all your support, mate. And I'm pretty sure I've actually met Paul. I'm sure he's come to the UK, unless I'm thinking of the wrong person. And I was looking forward to tonight, because I do like having people on from all over the world. And I also like having new guests on. There's sort of that critique with PWR where people say, oh, Mark, you've got like five or six guests that you really love. You know, you really love to sort of like to have Morgoth. You really love to have, you know, Keith. You like Stryker. You like Warren. You like Mike. You like Blackpilled. And there are people I get on really well with, but I do like the new guests. I do think it's important for new guests to come on the show and for us to grow it, you know. And yeah, you do have big shows with people like David Duke or Jared Taylor, but it's nice to have somebody new on. And I'm pretty sure I've met Paul in the past. I'm sure he's been to London and spoken at events that I've spoken at. And I do respect the guy. I know he's been in the game for a long time, and I'm more than happy to have him on and rearrange this. And obviously the fact he's in ill health is obviously inconvenient for me, but it's also inconvenient for him. So we do wish him all the best and hope he gets better soon. NW Longports gave another $15. Thank you so much. He said, the wrong way to do it, appeasement, like Marine Le Pen. The right way to do it, parallel societies like Patriot Front, Patriotic Alternative, Australian Nationalist Party, Nord Front, Bitterinders, and many others. Fix the electorate to replace socialists and liberals. I've got to say this. For me, personally, I think demographically things have gone too far. There isn't going to be a radical nationalist party that turns things around. I mean, in the UK, you know, things are at situation critical. You know, white British births make up just 55.6% of all live births in the country, which is worrying enough. But at the other end of the scale, 12.7 million people are aged 65 and above. And of those 12.7 million, 93% or 11.8 million people are white British. So we've got 11.8 million white Brits who in the next 25 years, statistically, will be reduced to just 500,000. There's only 500,000 people live over the age of 90. So those between 65 and 90, 11.3 million white Brits will statistically die off between those age groups over the next 25 years. And by the time that happens, you're going to see white British births be a minority. And what's more, it's not just that we're seeing the old people die off. Every time one of the old people dies off, the government replaces them. And you know that's happening because we have such a high rate of immigration, especially from, you know, coloured countries, you know, from places like India, Pakistan, Bangladesh, you know, African countries, that you know 100% that it's not just going to be a loss of 11.3 million people. It's actually going to be a net change of something like 22.6 million because we'll lose 11.3 and those 11.3 will be replaced by 11.3 million overseas people of migrant background. That's just how it works. It's horrendous, but I see the way forward being racially conscious white people must leave large, overcrowded, multicultural cities and cluster together in places where they can build their own little homelands. NW Longports gave another $15. Thank you so much. He said, unhappy middle class Americans are acting up. A 38-year-old unhappy middle class American threw a firebomb at the governor's mansion in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. The governor, of course, is the redoubtable Josh Shapiro. Josh, of course, insists that the attack was all anti-Semitic. But the attack shows the profound unpopularity of Mr. Shapiro and the 20 or so ultra-left-wing American governors, primarily the Democratic Party, to quote leftist Bobby Dylan, the times they are a-changing. Well, firstly, I've got to say we do not in any way support or endorse any form of violence against elected officials. And, you know, I understand people are frustrated, but that is the kind of action that will get people and groups, you know, shut down, put in prison. You know, we don't want that. I feel sorry that guy took that kind of action, and I understand that he's obviously very angry and probably has good reasons to be angry, but I will always push for a political solution, not a parliamentary or electoral solution, but a political solution. Legal advocacy coupled with community building and clustering in the correct areas, they're the only things that can save our people now. Those who want to take you down an electoral road for another 20 years will tell you that they've got a 20-year plan to rescue the country. They're grifters, they're con artists, and along that 20-year road, they'll walk you to a dead end. But along the way, they will drop all the core issues. They will drop their ethno-nationalist stance. They will call themselves something other than ethno-nationalists. They will stop talking about the JQ. They will stop talking about Israel. They will stop talking about Zionist power. And eventually, they will become what the Reform Party has or what Le Pen has in France, but without the power of either. Stasniki4off gave $3. Thank you so much. Said, hi, Mark. Big question. If that's true, do you think Trump's imposing or remaining in place tariffs on the UK and other Western nations can make a significant difference if the governments of those countries refuse to reverse its hate speech laws? There is some talk about this. Do you think there's some good potential for Trump to put pressure on those hostile anti-white government leaders? Trump talks a big talk, and that's the problem. So Trump talks a big talk. And he really does love to say what he's going to do. So, and I like what he says. And if he followed through on the things that he was talking about, I would give him, you know, my blessing. Not that he needs my blessing. Who am I compared to him? But Trump is one of those guys who is very, very good at saying things people want to hear. So the idea that Trump is going to put trade tariffs on the UK because of the Online Safety Act, because of draconian new legislation, because mums are being pulled out of their homes and arrested and put in prison for Facebook posts, that is a great idea. Will he do it? No. And when I say no, I mean, I don't think he's going to do it. But on the off chance that he does, he'll reverse the policy in 2 or 3 days when somebody says something different, whispers something in his ear, and he does an about face, because that is Donald Trump, unfortunately. That is who he is as a person. You know, one day he says, you know, when he came in, what did he do? We have these big sort of ceremonial deportations, people being led onto huge military cargo planes. Everyone thought the war was going to be won. Less than 3 months in, he's saying, well, actually, now if they're working on farms, they can all stay. You know, that's where you are with him. So I do like the idea of him pressuring the UK government into enshrining our free speech, but I just don't think he's gonna, I don't think he's gonna actually follow through on it. I think the sticking point may be with Rumble, simply because JD Vance has some interests in Rumble, and I think he might swoop if that was threatened. And also Rumble is somewhere where all his pals stream. So people like that, Dan Bongino, I think that's how you pronounce it. Anyway, they all stream over on Rumble, you know. So I think, yeah, that might be where he draws the line. NW Lon Ports gave another $5. Thank you so much. He says, Mr. Trump has not moved against Patriot Front. Elon Musk has attacked and belittled Patriot Front. Trump is not fundamentally hostile to heavy duty white nationalists or its leaders. He will not go after them. No chance at all. I'm not so sure about that. I found that, what's his name? That horrible Musk was absolutely vile about Patriot Front and all these. I don't understand this. So I see Patriot Front doing great stuff like disaster relief or doing really good protests or holding really good events. And all the comments in the Twitter posts or the videos are attacking them, saying like, oh, they're feds. You know, you can see they're feds. They're clearly. I don't know why people do this. You know, I've never seen a group do so much good work yet and face such deplatforming, yet at the same time be called feds. If there's a group that actually are feds, they will be on Twitter, they will be on Facebook, they will be on YouTube, because they're given a pass. You're not a group of feds if you're deplatformed. You're deplatformed because you don't work with the feds. You're platformed and boosted when you do. That's how it works. So I can't understand people's logic with Patriot Front, because they're one of the most deplatformed groups in America. You know, they struggle with any form of payment processing or anything like that. You know, they're on all these sort of backwater places, and they find it very difficult to even get any media coverage. Now, if they were feds, they would be on Twitter, they'd be drawing people in, because the whole point of a fed op is to get the group in question as much publicity as, you know, the establishment possibly can, to draw more people in to the sting, to catch more people in the dragnet. That's how it works. A fed op isn't deplatformed and put on minor sites and struggles to get its name out, or else it's the most useless fed up going. So yeah, I do like Patriot Fund, and I think the accusations that Musk, you know, had for them was just disgusting. But that's what I expect from Musk. We've got another $5 here from NW Long Ports. Thank you so much. And he said, Trump just eliminated DEI, diversity, equity, inclusion, and fired dozens of senior DEI government leaders. If hate laws were to disappear from Europe very quickly, so would all its Levantine invaders. As I said, Trump has done the odd good thing, and I'll definitely concede there. Getting rid of DEI is good. Getting rid of the people you've got rid of, good. You know, I like that. I'm not against that in the slightest. But again, when he does things like this, somebody said this to me the other day. You can turn the clock back, but it's pointless. You can turn the clock back. You can, you know, if you don't want it to be 3 o'clock in the afternoon and you turn the clock back, you can take it back to 1 o'clock. But when 2 hours pass, the clock will read 3 o'clock again. And the point being that some of the things Trump is doing are just equivalent to turning the clock back, you know. But the fact is, when the Democrats get in, the clock will just tick forward again. To be where we need to be, we don't want to just look at the clock and say, let's turn it back a couple of hours. We need to rewire that, and the clock needs to be moving in the opposite direction. It needs to be, you know, rewired, reconfigured, and the hands need to be going the other way around. We don't just turn the clock back so it advances again to where we don't want it to be. We need to completely reorientate society. And I fear that what Trump is doing will not achieve that goal. But to achieve that goal, you need to be in the kind of position that somebody like a leader in China or Putin's in. You know, Putin completely reorientated his economy to be a manufacturing export-based fortress economy. It took him decades to do it, but he did it and it worked. Trump's got 4 more years. There will be a Trump successor, and I think the Republicans will win, will most likely win a second term, or win a term after Trump. I mean, he's obviously had his second term, but I think sort of the Trump movement will take another term, albeit with a different leader. But I think over time, the demographic reality of what's happening in America, and also potentially the rise of a very popular sort of Hispanic leader, sort of a Hispanic version of Barack Obama, would, especially if it's under the Democrat flag, I think that would, you know, reset pretty much everything that Trump has done. And unfortunately, I think the only way forward for America is a breakup of the union. I think individual states, because there are some states that are still 90% plus white, I believe New Hampshire is one. I think you could actually have a situation where states broke away, enforced their own borders, and were much better on their own than being part of the union and being governed by federal law. That's just how I see it. Stas Nikiforov gave another $3, thank you so much, or $6 in total. He said, Mark, I mentioned to you about the upcoming protest in Birmingham led by Paul Golding in Britain First on May the 17th. What can we expect there, and why do you think it can be dangerous? Also, is there a chance you can invite Paul on your show, especially since you are members of the BNP at once? Well, I would like Paul to maybe come on the show. You know, I would have nothing against Paul Golding coming on this show. I think Britain First had a very, very good march in Nuneaton. They had over 500 people there. They had a good stage. I've got to say this about Britain First. Some people say, oh, that they're soft on certain things, or they're not ethno-nationalist enough, and they're certainly not talking about the state of Israel. But when they hold a march, it looks impressive, and they have a rule. No flags from outside the home nations. So you can bring an England flag, you can bring a Welsh flag, you can bring a Scottish flag, you can bring the British flag, you can bring a Northern Ireland flag. They might allow like the Cornish flag or regional flags or the English Lion flag. But what they don't allow is Israeli flags. And I've got to hand it to Paul, you know, not everything he does is my cup of tea. But when he held that recent march through Nuneaton, it looked fantastic. It looked fantastic. A sea of England flags. Brilliant. Not one Israeli flag, not one token sort of Iranian flag before the revolution because Maya Tusi's there. God, you know, nothing like that. It looked good. So the Nuneaton March was a real success. And, you know, if Paul ever reached out to me and says, get your people to one of these things and we'll do a joint event, I obviously would, because I'm generally pretty open to working with other people and groups. However, and you can always tell when I'm going to sort of change that, because I usually give a really positive intro and then follow it with a however. However, I'm not so sure about a march through Birmingham. The reason being, Birmingham is about 42% white British. It's got a large Muslim population. At the time of the protests in the wake of the Southport killings, there was serious disturbances in Birmingham where very well-armed Muslim gangs confronted people that they erroneously believed to be right-wing protesters. There was footage of Muslim gangs attacking cars that they thought had, well, they saw white people in them, I assume, and thought, well, they could be right-wing protesters. And Birmingham is one of those places that I think fundamentally is too far gone. I don't think you're turning around London, Birmingham or Leicester. London's 36% white British, Birmingham 42%. I mean, that's the last census. So what could it be now? It might be 39%. You know, Leicester is around 30% white British. You're not saving cities like that. The only way you're saving cities like that is maybe 40, 50, 60 years down the line after a long, drawn out process where people wake up and then there genuinely is a movement of, you know, mass deportations and assisted repatriations. But, you know, either way, Birmingham is not going to be white when Paul Golding holds his march there. And I think it's going to be very dangerous. I think there could be a serious flashpoint. If there is, the police will kettle the nationalists. They could get attacked. They could get hurt. And there will be people, you know, it's not like Nuneaton. People will be making their way to the march point. They could be picked off by gangs. It's not just young Muslims. There's a large black population in Birmingham as well. The local football supporters in Birmingham are not nationalists. So something that you've got to bear in mind when you hold a protest is, what do the local football hooligans think? Well, there were certain football hooligan firms and certain sets of football fans that were always National Front supporters that were, I mean, places like Leeds, the football hooligans in Leeds were National Front supporters. Football hooligans in Chelsea, we know who they supported and we know what they were called. I'm not going to say it on stream, but the fact is they were nationalists. Now in Birmingham, it's the opposite. The Birmingham, I think it was Birmingham City, the Birmingham City fans were all multiculturalists. They were a firm, a multicultural football firm, multicultural football supporters who went and challenged football firms they perceived to be racist or supporters of nationalist organizations. So when you're going to Birmingham, you're not only facing hostile ethnic groups, the Muslim population, the black population, you're actually facing hostile white groups in terms of the football fans. So God, you know, I do worry about the safety, and I, you know, it's not for me to tell Paul what to do, but I wouldn't arrange a march through such a heavily multicultural and hostile area, especially not at the current time, because as everyone knows, tensions are already high in Birmingham at the moment because the bin men are on strike. There's some 17 tons of garbage piled up on the streets. They've got an epidemic of giant rats running between the bins. It's been really hot weather. Everywhere will be stinking. People will be angry. And you couple that with a nationalist group coming to town, the ethnic mix of the area, the football fans. there is, and I hope it goes well for them. I really hope they pull it off. I don't wish them any ill, but I think it's one of those, you know, I think it's one of those places where people could get really hurt. And, you know, there are places in the East and West Midlands in Britain where you could hold a march, where they're still white, where people would really embrace it. You know, I went to Cannock. We did a big event in Cannock. It was absolutely fantastic. People loved it. Everyone supported it. People were out cheering for us when we came into the town centre, because it was a white town, you know, in the Midlands. But Birmingham, you know, there is real potential for trouble. And I'd advise caution to anyone who's going. It's certainly not the place where you'd want to go if you're elderly, if you're a woman, if you're thinking of taking the family. It's not going to be something where you can take a woman, your family, or elderly nationalists, because if it does go south there, people could get really hurt. So I do support the idea of these you know, big protests. I think they're good. I think Paul's commendable for not having the Israeli flags there, but Birmingham is a place I personally would not choose to hold an event of that kind. So yeah. NW Longports gave another $25. Thank you so much for your generosity tonight, my friend. He says, have you ever done an interview with James Edwards of the USA? Has Mark Cottrell of Heritage and Destiny appeared on the show? And I love to see his chaps on PDR. No. I've invited James Edwards. Everyone should write to James Edwards. I want him on the show. I've actually written to him. I was in conversation with him a couple of days ago. He hasn't got back to me. James Edwards from the Political Cesspool, if he wants to come on the show, write to him, pressure him, get him in touch with me. Archie gave 744. Thank you so much. He says, has Frank De Silva of the Silent Brotherhood been on PA? Nordic Frontier had him on this week on Rumble. Frank has published powerfully insightful analysis of the effectiveness of students for democratic socialism and the Weather Underground in the 60s and 70s. I've not actually heard of him. I'd be welcome to have him on the show. Please message me if you want guests on, if you can get me with guests. Next few weeks, I've got Morgoth next week. I've been in contact with Emily Ukis. I want her back on. Tom Sunick, I'd like him on. Obviously, I'd like to rearrange with Paul in maybe a few weeks or so when we can. And I would really like James Edwards from the Political Cesspool on. And I'm going to be doing an interview again with Tim Murdoch soon. I'll have him back on because I love having him on. So thank you so much. Ian Holloway gave $14. Thank you so much. She said, I saw Isabel Peralta at the Heritage Conference. She absolutely lit up the room. She's the real deal, and I would urge everyone to support her. Ian is probably being beaten with a stick now by his wife for that. Are you joking, Ian? for that comment. But no, she's Isabel is a lovely girl, and I've got to say, she's got a real energy to her, and I really do urge, you know, joking aside, I know Ian in real life, obviously that's why I made the joke. Don't kill him, wife, Ian. Don't kill me for making the joke. But yeah, she's a really lovely girl. She's very attractive, full of energy. She's the kind of person who makes a very, very good advocate for our movement. Please do support her. Saturn V gave $12. Thank you so much. Said, hi, Mark. Did you see the Bitcoin conference where Liz Truss was a guest speaker? She sounded like a Farage to me. Maybe a gatekeeper, but she knows what Bitcoin is about and said as much as she knows she is allowed to. I didn't see that. I've seen Liz Truss make a couple of really good comments recently about Lucy Connolly. I did a video on Lucy Connolly last week. Please check that out. But Liz Truss made this big deal that Lucy Connolly should not be in jail. That it's a disgrace. That's good. The only thing is, she was prime minister. In the short time she was prime minister, she gave that talk to the Conservative Friends of Israel, where she talked about how proud she was to be a Zionist. Jez gave $15. Thank you so much, my friend. He said, hope Kevin McDonald is happy he voted Trump and saved the US from Kamala. How can one write the culture of critique and have such a huge blind spot from an Israeli asset is beyond me? The only good advice for that election was not to vote for anyone, just like in most Western countries now. I think the problem with that election is, as America is at around, well, we estimate, because it is just a guess, it is just an estimate, you know, the last census was 5 years ago, and it was 61.6%. Now, a census is best case scenario. So the last census, things were looking grim. 5 years on from there, and basing that the census might be up to a percentage point or more out. Like I said, America could be being pushed now to around 55% white American. And there is another problem as well, because I want to discuss this because a friend of mine pulled me up on this. I regularly speak to a South African called Arthur Kemp, and Arthur is really, really hot on all this. And he was critiquing my work. And I really like being critiqued, actually. Not least because you don't learn unless you are critiqued. If everyone just says, "Oh, Mark, that was the best video I've ever done," it's nice hearing that. But ultimately, that doesn't help you evolve. It doesn't help you produce a better video next time. So I do like it when people critique me. But Arthur came up with this really important point. And the point is that in America, they have several designations. Now, one is just generally white. And the white population in America, they reckon, is still around 66%. But that includes what are called white Hispanic. But then they have a category called white only. And that is meant to be, or largely seen, and that's where I'm getting the 61.6% from. But white only is meant to be white European. But it actually includes lots of people from places in the Middle East and other places where they are sort of could be seen as Caucasian, but they are not white European. So you might have somebody who's sort of Lebanese. You might have somebody who is, from Syria. Obviously, Assad and his wife looked pretty much white. They're Mediterranean. To be fair, that's how you'd classify them. You classify them as Mediterranean, sort of, in the same way as, Italians, so Romans, Greeks, and, Syrians at one point, Mediterranean. Now it's sort of known as Middle Eastern, but they class many of them as white in the census as well. So what you actually end up with is again, slightly misleading figures. So the American population could be in a worse situation than you think. And that's why I think Kevin, and others sort of begrudgingly supported Trump, because they're looking at this and saying this is potentially the last election where whites will be an actual or sort of, European Americans will actually be the majority. By what will it be, 2028, what will they be? Could be 52%. Could be 51%, could just dip under. I mean, I've seen people in the chat tonight saying they think they're already a minority. So I think Kevin McDonald's done some amazing work throughout his life, but I do think it was a difficult election to make the call. And I flip-flopped several times on my position, I've got to say, so I'm not innocent on that. But thank you so much for the generous super chat. Archie gave $5. Thank you so much. Said Ben Shapiro is campaigning for Trump to pardon Derek Chauvin. What is Ben's motive to attract white nationalists? Well, look, this is the thing, Archie. If he does that, I will absolutely be over the moon, okay? If he does that. And he should. But what is Shapiro's motive? I don't know. I don't know. The thing is with people like Ben Shapiro and people who are in sort of the, Zionist-controlled sort of counterculture conservative movement, is every now and again they do say things that are correct. Every now and again they will say something that is populist and that people like us will say, "Oh, well, I agree with that." But that doesn't mean they're on our side, and he may well have an agenda. I will say you this, though. If Trump did pardon Derek Chauvin, you would end up in a situation where probably several, major American cities would be burnt to the ground within a week or so. I should imagine there would be absolute chaos. But one thing about Zion Don, I did say Trump was the accelerationist candidate. I did say if you want to see America and the world accelerate towards the position of complete meltdown, vote for Donald Trump, because he's going to get you there quicker than Kamala. And if he freed Derek Chauvin, he would definitely be the accelerationist candidate, because that would be. And Shapiro is somebody he may well listen to. Who knows? NW Lon Ports gave another $50. Thank you so much for your generosity tonight. You've been super, super generous. He said, PWR host pretty hard on Donald Trump, as are most area nationalists worldwide. I offer a challenge. Listen to 1 hour of the all-news Washington, D.C.-based radio station, WTOP. There you will hear what the D.C.-based American liberals think of Trump and what he is really doing. Go to www.wtop.com and find Listen Live, and I think you will find a different story. Trump is merely an Israeli shill and breaking all of his promises. Well, and he gave another $25 for the second part of the chat. Well, thank you so much, my friend. Well, we can go to that and we can check that out. I'm more than happy to check that out. And if I'm wrong, I'm wrong. But I do worry about a couple of things with Trump. And one of the things I worry about fundamentally is that war with Iran. I really worry about a war with Iran. And if he was to do that, with him being like the de facto anti-war candidate, I think that would be the final straw for me. They Own You gave $5. Thank you so much. He said, from the US, keep up the good work, Mark. And yes, Trump is a Zionist snake in the grass, as are pretty much all Western compromise selected politicians. Well, thank you so much. Scaredy Cat gave $8. Thank you so much, my dear. And she said, hi, Mark. In my sight, you're the best leader for the UK. This is because you pull people up with your best ideals. Your honesty makes you dig and present truth in detail of who is doing what to whom. Your honour will treat other nations fairly. Thus, world prospers. Well, thank you so much. I'd love to be the leader of the UK. Probably unlikely to happen, but if I can make life better for white people in some small way and advance our cause, I will keep doing that as long as you guys want me to keep doing that and keep helping me keep my head above water. So thank you so much for your continued support. Rich 17 gave $5. Thank you so much. There's no political solution because it's the civil servants that run the country. None of them are nationalists, and there is not a polling station in the world where you can vote these people out. Well, again, I fundamentally agree. And I saw this was when I was in the BNP. So what would actually happen when a BNP councillor got elected is the BNP councillor would go into the council thinking that he or she could turn to officers within the council for help. So, you know, you're a new councillor, you get sworn in, you want to know, you put on a small panel about, let's say, bin collections, and you want to know about the bin collections, where you get the info on it, how you can find out how money's spent, how the hiring and firing works for those doing the bin collections. And you go into the council, and often people were met with a wall of silence, because after years and years of Labour and Conservative rule, all these councils were completely staffed by people who hated the BNP, and it made it virtually impossible to get things done, because you weren't going in there. So if you imagine a council office, and it's all staffed by robots, and the robots just carry out instruction to the best of their ability, you could go in there as a BNP councillor, speak to the robots, and you'd get given the information and the help that you needed to the best of the ability of that particular robot. Obviously, we're talking hypothetical here. This was like futuristic council where, people get elected, but all the legwork's done by robots. But they're not robots. They're actual people. They're people who've been given jobs by Labour councillors and by an establishment. And they are all friends and, sometimes party colleagues with those Labour councillors. So when you go in there as an outsider, they will actively prevent you from doing your job. And you even see that on the small local council level. It's terrible. N.W. Lomports gave another $25. Thank you so much for your generosity tonight. He said, America has never seen a group like Patriot Front in its history, not since the Sons of Liberty in the Revolutionary War, circa 1770. They are a million times more threatening to the powers that be than any presidents. That's why PF is under fire. Well, I agree. And as I said, I completely support them. And I support Thomas. I think he's a wonderful guy. Sparky 14 gave $5. Thank you so much. He says, hi, Mark. This is a good site run by Dave Gahari and has a payment processor. And he sent a thing, an address. So let me see which is the, why can't I open it? I'm going to put the link in the chat. It's an X link, so it's going to be safe. There's the link in the chat if you want to follow it for the super chat. There you go. Thank you so much for the $5. Kerry Boo gave $20. Thank you so much. Said, great show, Mark. Take my money. Well, I'm pleased you enjoyed it, even though I've been going solo. I found these shows quite fun, actually. Maybe I should have done more like this. Black Sheep gave $25. Thank you so much. Said, congratulations, your son. Looking forward to seeing Sam Melia in a stream in the future. Yeah, so am I. We all miss Sam an incredible amount, and it's really gutting that he isn't back with his family yet. It shows you just how awful the system is. So at the moment, Sam is being forced to live at a hostel, and the hostel is sort of half an hour's drive from where his wife and children are. So he's not actually allowed to live at home, and he can leave the hostel, I think, at 6 o'clock in the morning, but he has to be back for midday to sign in to prove he's not gone on the run. And then he can be then with his family again until about 9 o'clock at night, which is when he has his curfew. And this means that he's still under a lot of stress. But what's even worse is the system won't let him get a job, won't let him do anything normal, won't let him take a holiday with his family. He has to be watched as if he was a terrorist. They treat him like he's Carlos the Jackal. It's absolutely sickening what he's going through. And even though they've been forced to release him early because he's been so good, he is in no way a free man. I mean, I'm pleased he gets to see Laura and the kids, but they're not doing right by him. The system are trying to break him. So I can't wait to get him on a stream. I can't wait to get him back on the Nationalist A team. I can't wait to do things with him socially again. I miss him a lot. You know, I'm not saying this is all about me. The hardest people this has hit is not Sam, but Laura and the kids. But from my perspective, as somebody who, you know, is a very dear friend of Sam's, I miss him a lot. And, you know, the last year or so without him, not having him around, not having him to talk to, not having him to help with events, it's been hard. And I really do miss him. You know, I love the guy, and I want to see him back with his family. I want to see him back with his community. I want to see him back with PA. You know, I want to see him back on the streams. You know, we all miss him a lot. He's a big guy with a big heart and a big personality. And, you know, the quicker he's back where he belongs, the better. These blue eyes gave $10. He said, I really loved your rant at the end. Well, thank you so much. I do occasionally go on rants. Probably not as often as I should do. Scaredy Cat gave $8. Thank you so much. And said, hi again, Mark. We must think of money. Steve D. Grumbine of Macro and Cheese podcast, founder of therealprogressives.org, says the federal budget need not be balanced since it prints dollars. In contrast, households and municipal governments must earn / tax to spend. Well, one of the problems we've got with money is, and this is why the system doesn't really collapse. It's because the system is largely built around, you know, fractional reserve banking and money that can be just created at the touch of a button. Now, we've never had that in history before. If you think back to great empires like the Egyptians, the Romans, the Greeks, they had wealth, they had power, they had manufacturing, they had mighty armies, but it was all funded. And if the gold wasn't there to back it up, if there wasn't money, if there wasn't the ability for people to have, you know, some quality of life, empires collapse. But for the first time in history, we live in these weird times where the government can just create money, where banks can just create money, where if there is a run on the banks, somebody can just push a few buttons, you know, in a central bank, and that bank is propped up and all the people who've got savings get their money back. And it sort of prevents that economic collapse. So yes, it does cause inflation. Yes, the money isn't real. Yes, people are just being given money so they are forever consumers. But it does prop up the system. Now, can it prop up the system forever? I don't know. But the system has, for want of a better phrase, numerous ways to keep kicking that ball into the long grass. So you look at it and you think to yourself, how much can the system print? How far can this all go? How long can this continue for? And the answer is, I don't know. But one thing I do know is at the moment, despite people having a slightly harder time than they did, you know, maybe in the 80s, 90s, or early 2000s, they are still far better off than they were in the 70s, the 60s, the 50s, the 40s. You know, people are still coming in from work on an evening. They're still sitting in front of their 70-inch, you know, TV, watching Netflix, playing computer games. There's still two cars on the drives. There's still Deliveroo drivers queuing out the door at McDonald's to take everyone their tea. And whilst they keep printing money, whilst the government keep topping up people's wages, because that's what they do in the UK. So if you're a working family, you can apply for a top up to your income. So you can apply for universal credit. So you go down to you know, the benefits office, or you register online, and you will be given a form. You fill it out, you say how much you're earning, and the government will top up your income. That's how a lot of people survive now. And fundamentally, the government will keep doing this until they can't keep doing it anymore. But because the money isn't backed up by anything, I can't see any reason why this would stop. You know, people will say, well, eventually the debt will become so big, but they can just write the debt off. They can just repay people. They can just rebalance the books with a few clicks on a keyboard. And that's one of the big issues. You know, since I've been involved in nationalism, people have always uttered this phrase, things will never get better until they get worse. We will never come to power. We will never see a mass awakening until people are hungry and cold. And at the moment, people are still a long way off from being hungry and cold. You know, I don't go to McDonald's very often anymore, but we went out for a shopping trip, and we went to McDonald's, and it not only is it bloody expensive now, like twice what it used to be, but it was absolutely packed. And I mean packed. The actual indoor seated area was packed. The drive-through was queuing sort of 10 cars back. And there was two queues at the counter, one for people sitting in and one for Deliveroo drivers taking all of those, you know, home deliveries. And whilst that quality of life is maintained, whilst they can keep printing that money, it's going to be very difficult for us ever to get to a position where people are sort of slapped around the face and forced to wake up. Now, if tomorrow we woke up and the tap had been turned off and people weren't getting, you know, their top ups, they weren't getting the universal credit, they weren't getting any government assistance, the migrants weren't being given any money, there wasn't going to be, breaks for people with council tax and other things, everyone had to pay their way, all of a sudden there would probably be serious upheaval, especially in ethnic minority areas, especially amongst, you know, demographics that are more likely to take to the streets and commit to certain actions. But the fact is, we're still a long way off that. And even now, after years of so-called austerity, after a credit crunch, after the government having to repeatedly tighten their belts, there are still hundreds of millions, if not billions, being spent on frivolous projects, on DEI, on, you know, tens of thousands of migrants that arrive every month. And the government doesn't mind, because there's still more, and there always will be more when you base your finances on a system where money can be created from nothing. And most of these politicians look at it as like, look, we've got to make sure we get through the next 5 years. And then they'll be thinking, and then I've got to make sure I either get re-elected or I've got a good enough pension plan so I live out my days. That's all they're worried about. And that's all it is now. It's just basically keeping things rolling forward and keeping a lid on any tensions before whites become a minority. At the point white Brits become a minority, there might be massive changes. There might be unrest. At that point, the government might, you know, when like you go out for a meal and you're sort of holding it all in with your belt, and you finally get home and you let your belt out and you're, oh God. And I think that might be what happens. I think they're holding everything in and holding it together until whites become a minority. And at that point, it won't matter. because at that point you're not actually winning ever in any way by the ballot box. There's not going to be a mass populist revolution. The AfD aren't winning then. You know, Marine Le Pen isn't winning then. Reform isn't winning then. You know, and I think they're holding it all in. They're holding it together with free money and putting a band-aid on things and, you know, tying it all together with, you know, with sellotape and a little bit of blue tack, just holding it all together as long as they can to keep the wheels on the wagon. But the wheels have to stay on the wagon until we are officially done and in a position where we can't rise up as a majority. Anyway, that brings us to the end of the show. I hope everyone's really, really enjoyed tonight's show. I've quite enjoyed it, despite the fact it's just been me. We wish all the best to Paul, of course. We hope he gets better soon. You know, unfortunately, you couldn't make it on, but I hope you are in good health. Next week, I've got Morgoth on. We're going to be doing a special about the Online Safety Act, Gab and BitChute, and I've got a video out on that on Friday. I'll also be with David Duke then. Thank you so much to everyone who stuck with me. Thank you so much to everyone who donated so generously. And if you are watching on repeat, you can still donate via cryptocurrency or by Entropy when I'm offline. I will see you same time next week. Until then, stay strong, keep fighting. I love you all. Thank you. I hope you enjoyed this solo show. Good night and have a great Easter.